Hello, friends.
It's Ariel Helwani of The Ringer MMA Show.
I'm Chuck Mindenhall.
And I'm Petey Carroll. And together, we are 3-Pack.
Follow and listen to The Ringer MMA feed exclusively on Spotify for all the latest in the world of mixed martial arts.
And join us live on Spotify Green Room after every big event.
See you then. Love yous. Mwah.
This episode is brought to you by Anytime Fitness. We're not all professional athletes, but we all have health goals. That's why Anytime Fitness gives you access to personalized plans and support from a coach. Plus, you can track your training, nutrition, and recovery progress with the Anytime Fitness app, just like the pros. With 24/7 access to more than 5,000 gyms worldwide, get more from your gym membership. Visit anytimefitness.com to try it for free today. Terms, conditions, restrictions all apply. See website for details.
Can you change that to my vocal? Hi everyone, welcome to Righty's House. I hope you're all safe and well. Today we're going to be talking about Spurs parting ways with Antonio Conte. We're going to have some chat about England and the importance of Saka and Bellingham at such a young age. We'll also talk about the WSL title race and have a few questions about that. And my guests are Flo Lloyd Hughes and Musa Akwanga. How are you guys and girls?
Very well, very well.
Everybody cool?
Good, good. I want to hear about Moose's gallivanting around the world, but that's maybe for the after dark version of Righty's House. Too early, maybe.
Are you cool, Moose? What's been happening?
I was in South Africa last week for Friends 40th, which was amazing. Mm. South Africa, each time I go, is, how do I say this? It's one of the most joyful places I've ever been, but also one of the most heartbreaking. Mm-hmm. Just in terms of the people and the incredible people, but also like the heartbreaking structure. Yeah, it's another level. So yeah, I'm back for my gallivanting. I'm in Berlin and then I'm off abroad again next week.
It sounds cool.
To live and work elsewhere.
Yeah. Everything cool, Flo?
Yeah, all good.
Younger form?
All good. Where was I? I can't remember where I was on the weekend. Oh yeah, I was at Brisbane Road for the Women's North London Derby. The Arsenal fans were big vibes. They were very loud.
Nice.
Very, very loud.
It sounded like an Arsenal home game.
Yeah, it was, pretty much. It was. The vibes were good.
We will talk about that later. But like, seeing as we're on Tottenham, we might as well talk about Antonio Conte being sacked from Spurs. So it's always going to happen. I think from the time Antonio Conte refused the job the first time, and then, what was it, 6 months later after Nuno, kind of like dropped the ball, and then he took it. It didn't feel right. If you're going to take that Tottenham job, then you take it at the start. Because as soon as he got there, we're talking like weeks, he started to talk about how poor the team is, how poor it is in respects of the standard, and it's going to be so tough. You know, it was very negative from the off.
With Conte and Mourinho, these are managers who have this thing of their reign deteriorates, their aura deteriorates over time, right? And what we're just seeing with Conte and Mourinho is that deterioration is speeding up.
Right.
Because the old tricks they used that made them incredible managers at their very peak, and not to say that they haven't both got, you know, incredible peaks still left in them, at their very, very peak, they had that thing when they came into a club, set everything on fire, warmed themselves off the flame, everyone was elevated, everyone was in and up, and then of course it burns out because it doesn't work. And like what's happening now is I think they're realizing that management style works less and less in the modern context. It just works less and less. Mm. And each club they go to, it's actually not about, it could have been any club. It could have been Spurs. It could have been Marseille, wherever. It's just they're flaming out again and again because they're realizing earlier and earlier, this isn't working. The old techniques, people aren't responding to it. People aren't responding to go into a room and like wail at people. Because if you look at the management styles that are really succeeding at the elite level, like an Ancelotti, for example, it's all calm. It's all chill. It's all, I trust you. It's never like throwing the players under the bus publicly, right? It's never going for big drama. It's not getting overhyped when teams win or lose, right? So I think that kind of, they're governing like rock stars, but what is working now is like orchestra.
I also think, I think you're right. I think both Mourinho and Conte have failed to evolve as the game has moved on in terms of its methods and the way that managers work with players and things like that. But I also think what was so miserable about Conte is he didn't even really relish in the good moments, Musa, when they did have good results this season. Obviously, some of them it wasn't there for, because he was in Italy recovering from an operation. But across his short tenure there, there were positive moments, albeit only a few of them. And he didn't even really use those to galvanize the group, which is what with Mourinho, in the very negative Mourinho, which we've seen for the last like 10 years now, right? He dines out on quite crappy performances and you're like, there he goes again. You know, Roma nick a 1-0 win and Mourinho thinks he's a genius. Conte became so negative and almost toxic and poisonous that he wouldn't even let those things enlighten him and give him a good spirit. And I think that's why I really feel for Spurs fans, because there's now been a long-term tussle between big personality managers or an okay coaches that they haven't been able to kind of transfer into managers, and the boardroom. And the ones who suffer are the players and the fans. And there's obviously incredible talent there with Harry Kane basically single-handedly putting them in the position to get Champions League this season. And everyone and the fans are just having to kind of like turn up every week and still watch their heroes in Kane and Son, you know, deliver something. But it's so miserable.
One. We did ask some questions. We got one from Edward K. He says, Moose, Flo, curious to know what you feel the difference was between Conte and Nathan Jones calling out their players. You guys seem much more critical to Jones. Is that because the managers are on different levels or specifics on what they said? Not calling you guys out, by the way. It's all love. It's all love, Edward K.
It's track record, though. It's
absolutely.
Actually, I was pretty brutal towards Conte's remarks. And I probably went easier on Nathan Jones than I should have done on Stadio, at least. I think that, look, Conte has a track record, and you might say that, you know, blowing everything up is what has worked for him. It has to a certain extent. I think that, you know, I personally think dressing room harmony is better in the long term. It's more sustainable emotionally and just in terms of the sporting results. But I think that it's pretty clear Conte was trying to get the sack with that last press conference.
Absolutely, man.
You know, he was trying to burn anything to the ground. Nathan Jones, I think the issue there was, there was the fear that the job was too big for him, actually. And he was trying to say things to make the job fit and make the job more comfortable, because it was a difficult job. There's no question, like, the situation he was in. So I have a lot of sympathy there. But I think it was also a huge and overwhelming experience maybe at some stage for him. I just think in a situation like that, you just get people on side a lot better. And we saw with Frank Lampard's second season. He was a lot better. He was a lot better regarded, actually. He got sacked, of course, in the end, but he was a lot better regarded when he started treating his players as assets and not liabilities. One thing I want to say very, very quickly on Conte before I forget this, it's a random thought, but the most damning, I think, the most damning indictment of Conte's reign is the form of Richarlison for Brazil at the World Cup and the form of Richarlison under Conte.
Yeah.
Because that is a highly motivated footballer who scored perhaps two of the best goals of the entire tournament and who was super motivated and comes back to Spurs and looks like
deflated,
a tenth of the player.
Absolutely.
And that's not on Richarlison, because that's a player that truly cares. So,
yeah, and I think that was so sad as well about his decline, because actually when he did first come in, he was one of the few Spurs players who was trying to use his talents in the best way, which is kind of to rattle opposition teams. And there were sparks of that very early on his Spurs career. And then clearly Conte just basically told him he can't do that. But why Conte, I think, is a lot worse than Nathan Jones is because, like you say, he didn't just throw his players under the bus. He attacked the whole institution. He attacked the whole entire club and basically said, I'm too good for you. This was never going to work. You guys are an embarrassment. You know, your culture, you're a culture of losers. This is never going to work. And I think that is so much worse than what Nathan Jones is. I think Musa, Nathan Jones seemed like he was in over his head. And I think a lot of people maybe could have seen that coming with the fact that he was quite inexperienced and only knew how to play a certain way and use certain type of players. And I think it's unfortunate how that ended, and he handled it so badly because he needed to galvanize his players and he didn't. But with Conte, I think it's so much worse because you're destroying everything. You're burning all the bridges, including a lot of your reputation.
You threw everyone
Nathan Jones will probably get another go at it. And he'll reflect on that and say, you know what, next time when we're in a difficult moment and we're fighting against relegation, I shouldn't be doing that. But he thought that was maybe the last resort. But with Conte, I just think the fact that you've been flirting with this club for so long and basically waiting for them to sack you, and then you do that in order to get it over the line, is just so, so disrespectful to everyone. And I would be raging if I was a Spurs fan. And I just can't believe the audacity of him to do that. It's just crazy.
But that's his move. I think that all the clubs he's been at, there's always been some massive contention before he goes. He's that, like you say, Moose, I totally agree with the style of management. It's a different kind of player for me. It's a different kind of player you're dealing with now. When you look at the players they dealt with before, like even you look at Mourinho's, when he first came and the way he was and how gregarious he was and brilliant, and he had the players in the dressing room to deal with that and deal with that kind of like that kind of energy to what he gave out. And I think it's the same with Conte. That's why he's so fiery. That's why he's like that. But I feel that he realized that he can't do that with those players. That place needs a total overhaul, man.
Can I have a hot take here as well?
Absolutely, absolutely.
So look, there's a lot of talk about how modern players are more fragile. I actually completely disagree. I think modern players are stronger than ever mentally. And I think the dressing room has to be a sanctuary. And here's why. If you look at like social media, right? Before the age of social media, the only place you would get those absolute, you get from the tabloids could go after you and try and destroy you. And you got it from the fans. But if you ignored the press and you dealt with the fans like twice a week on match day, you basically had a dressing room sanctuary, which is like, don't put papers in front of me. These days with social media, someone in the dressing room, even if you're not on social media, someone could put the phone under your nose and show you a meme going, this is what they're saying about you, right? So the attacks that managers are throwing, Conte is thinking, I've got to go into a dressing room and generate intensity and tension. No, it's already there, Conte, because they're getting it on social media. They're having stats thrown at them. What they need is to come into the dressing room and find a place that is harmonious and is a sanctuary from all of that. Because they're getting it everywhere else. Mourinho and Conte can talk about all of that all of you like, but it's already out there. They've got demons coming at them from all angles. So why do they need a demon coaching them? Yeah. Like, we already know demons. We want something else. And this is why Ancelotti is flourishing. This is why he's adapting. It's why Ferguson managed to adapt and why he had to become more of a kind of like friendly figure as time went on. Because Ferguson understood that the demons are coming from somewhere else. And this is why Conte, I think, has not clocked it yet.
Yeah. And I think it's not fragility. It's more that players are just more enlightened. They're more aware than they ever were before. And they demand a more holistic approach from a manager. Like, gone are the days where just screaming at someone is going to get them to go faster. Like, it's just not how it works anymore. So I think, yeah, you're right. Like, the bubble is so big that it's not like they can't handle it, but they expect more, and that's the difference. And I think maybe a lot of managers don't realize that.
You see, when you say that, you look at the latter stages of Wenger's tenure, and he was a manager that, I honestly, it was beautiful, Miss. It was harmonious. It was fantastic. It was, you know, maybe because he had a dressing room when I was in there of players that were highly motivated and needed him to come in with that kind of harmonious setting, what he put in place for us. You know, it was very intense, but it was very harmonious. And I think what happened with him in the end, he treated them so well, they actually took the kindness for weakness. You look at someone like Mourinho and you look at someone like Conte, they want the confrontation of somebody who they can scream and shout, and they scream back, and then bam, and everything goes well. Then afterwards, they hug them like they're long lost brothers. You know, a kind of management that I thought that I needed. And it's only when Wenger came, I realized I didn't fucking need that at all. And I'm quite, if that's the way they're going to have to like ease out of the game, and you finally get them because they, in the end, they self-implode and they blast themselves out of a club, because then sooner that manager's gone, the better. It's going to be better for the players, because I go with you, Moose. I believe, and the way I changed towards the end of my career of wanting that love without the social media shit, what they're getting. Just for the man that's in charge of you to just give you that setting where you cannot wait to go in and work and thrive without fucking beating you and slaughtering you. Wenger never threw anyone under the bus. He never blasted any of the players. He never said anything so negative about the club. That's why I have to say with what Ed was saying, of course, you know, I think I went pretty hard on Jones simply because I was so excited for Jones. Mm. I didn't see him as the guy that when it started to unravel for him, simply because, like we all know now, maybe it was in over his head with the job and the size of that Southampton job. And then I felt like he kind of like back took the easy way out and just blamed everybody and blamed the fact that, you know what I mean, what he's trying to do, these players are not doing it. I want to do this, but they want to do that. Right, I'm going to go back. It was like, it felt like excuses. So it might seem like we're being a lot harsher on him. Conte's done it in a different way. He's blamed everybody else, but he's done it with like, well, fuck you lot. He's done it with chest. Whereas I think that Nathan Jones didn't do it with chest, to be honest. I'm not saying it makes it any better, but I do feel like Conte fucked everybody off with chess. And I think he's out of order. And I think his time is short. His time is short, unless he changes the way he's going to manage.
I think that's fair.
It's going to be interesting to see where Spurs go next. And hopefully it's a new start for them because they've had some top managers. And at some stage, upstairs, he's got to change upstairs or he's got to change how he's running football club.
Yeah.
Simple as that.
This episode is brought to you by Anytime Fitness. We're not all professional athletes, but we all have health goals. That's why Anytime Fitness gives you access to personalized plans and support from a coach. Plus, you can track your training, nutrition, and recovery progress with the Anytime Fitness app, just like the pros. With 24/7 access to more than 5,000 gyms worldwide, get more from your gym membership. Visit anytimefitness.com to try it for free today. Terms, conditions, restrictions all apply. See website for details.
Guys, the England games. Can we do a little bit on Rashford quickly before we go into the actual England game? I want to talk about Saka. I want to talk about Bellingham. I want to talk about how impressed I am with the guys at the moment. But the Rashford stuff, again.
What is the Rashford stuff? Sorry.
Well, it's just that because he didn't join up because of injury and then he's gone to New York and he's kind of resting and because he's walking around in New York.
Wait. Sorry. Let's break it down.
Yeah.
So Marcus Rashford doesn't go and play for England because he's injured and he goes to New York just to relax.
Mm-hmm.
Having had like the major surgery, being in the form of his life. So he's going, so what? So professional athlete goes and relaxes responsibly.
Yes.
Away from media fanfare.
Moose, in the form of his life, doing whatever it takes right now to continue to be in the form of your life.
They have a problem with that.
So for people to try and turn it into, he's turning down England kind of because he wants to go on holiday. It's not going on holiday. This is all part of the process of being an elite player. Like Gareth said, listen, probably once these guys have stopped, they're going to go and have a couple of days somewhere. Let them do what they're doing.
Not being funny, but Marcus Rashford, if you know, my memory is not that short, that the man nearly ran his body into the ground
under
Ole Gunnar Solskjaer.
Yeah.
And now he's taking care of his body in the form of his life. People are coming for him.
Mm. And this is why.
It's absolutely wild.
And this is why we need to talk about, I thought the guys played very well the other day. Saka's goal, obviously I'm so proud of him. No, there's no fucking trade. In fact, if Ryan ever mentions trade again, I'm just going to fucking walk off the podcast. When you're looking at how he's operating, how Jude Bellingham's operating, I have to say they're at levels now where we have to start looking at how much fucking football they're playing, because we got
this graphic from Luke at Luorns on Twitter.
Fantastic it is. It's
Luorns on Twitter. Thank you so much,
it's
Luke.
It's brilliant, Moose. And when you look at it, and you look at before the age of 20, the games that these players have played, Jude Bellingham is at the top on 191 games played, 158 started. Neymar's the closest with 145 games started. But the names on there, how many names on there is like, so you've got Bellingham, Neymar, Pedri, Kylian Mbappe, Saka, Wayne Rooney, Dele Alli, Raheem Sterling, Iron Robin, Eden Hazard, Marcus Rashford, Cristiano Ronaldo, Robert Lewandowski, Karim Benzema, Erling Haaland, Lionel Messi, Xavi, and Harry Kane. And I think four of them are not forwards. And Dele Alli's in there as well, and we're seeing what's happening to him. I'm worried for Jude Bellingham simply because I know that the way that they prepare them in academies now for first team football's different, but that is a lot of football.
Yes.
That's a lot of fucking games.
At that intensity. At that intensity.
What he's playing at. Because when you look at that list flow, it's a lot of forwards. They're not doing the work what a midfielder is doing. You know, what he's having to do, to the point someone mentioned that he had a knee brace. I think Carl Anker mentioned it? That he's wearing a knee brace. That is a lot of football moves, and that is quite, I just feel a little bit worried.
Mm.
You know, Saka as well. I'm worried for Saka as well, because he's playing a lot of football as well. I know, like I say, they're built for it, but where do they get rest? Because that's a lot of fucking football.
It is. And it's, you know, if you look at the intensity of football now compared to 20 years ago as well, like the number of like high intensity sprints and all, it's just absolutely wild. And I think there's a thing about entitlement, isn't it? It all comes to entitlement. You look at the conversations around Rashford and what's he doing? Is he not training? First of all, everyone's going to forget this conversation in 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone's going to forget it because Rashford's going to score, like, he's going to have another career-defining performance, and it's going to be forgotten. So this is just chat. This is just tabloid chat. This is just like podcast discourse at this point. The concern about Bellingham and Saka is that they've made themselves indispensable their clubs in a way that very few players do.
Yeah.
And in a way, Pedri, Saka, and Mbappe in Bellingham are cursed. Because they are, you know, to quote the cliche, they're generational players. And generational players always play all the time.
I got cooked for calling Saka a generational player.
By whom?
Oh, they just came for me on here. They came for me. I've done it on the podcast.
This is the irony, right? Because we started this section talking about Rashford going away and getting rest. And the fact is that these players need to be given the tools to be able to do that, to get the best out of their careers. Because the same people that are criticising him for taking that time are the ones who are going to be set, who are saying right now, oh, look at all these minutes and we need to give Saka a rest, we need to give Bellingham a rest. You can't have it both ways. You need to acknowledge the requirements of these players and obviously the demands from their clubs and national teams about what they want to achieve. But in terms of England, I can understand that Gareth Southgate wants to play some of his best players. But at the same time, in some of these qualifiers where England aren't going to necessarily need their absolute best 11, and there are some players who are already playing so many minutes, you could say, like, let's not play that guy. Let's give him a break. Obviously, Saka scored an unreal goal in that game against Ukraine. And instantly it was like Arsenal fans obviously saying, get him off the pitch. Done and dusted. Like, protect him at all costs. Because every single game for Arsenal, if he gets chopped down, everyone's hearts are in their mouths because they're so worried about him getting injured. So I think there, even though I think, you know, Gareth Southgate's a brilliant manager and a coach, and obviously there are things that England need to achieve and you can't necessarily say, oh, just don't play him. But I also feel like I need him to maybe think a little bit more into the future about these players and look at past England players, Wayne Rooney being one of them, who probably didn't get enough out of his career because they were played too much when they were young and picked up injuries that weren't properly looked after. So I just want a little bit more foresight. I think it's fantastic that he's kind of protected Rashford a little bit with what he's going through right now and resting. But I need a little bit more foresight with especially Bellingham and Saka about, do we need to be playing these guys in some of these qualifiers, in some of these friendlies, in the Nations League and whatever?
When are they going to get rest?
They're competitive athletes. They're not going to say, rest me. But sometimes you need to take control and think what's best for them.
Terrible idea, but I'm throwing it out there. I wonder if at some point in the next 10 years, football will start experimenting seriously with the idea of revolving subs. Only because subbing players in and out, managing the intensity of these players, because the football, you know, 150 years ago, if you look at the rules and how it's evolved in terms of the squad and who's on the bench as well, I don't think it was designed for this level of intensity and this level of competition. You look at the World Cup expanding in terms of games and teams coming to the tournament. And don't get me wrong, like, I love the idea that more teams will participate. Also as well, conscious of the physical pressure on the bodies of these footballers. And the conversation about Rashford is if we haven't just had a World Cup, an actual World Cup in the middle of a season.
Yes.
The middle of, are we wild here? Like, we just completely normalized that, right? And then we've got European qualifiers. There's so much football. I forgot there was a Clásico the other day. I forgot there was a Clásico because there's so much football, right? On the Friday night, the Copa. So I just think either we experiment with different forms of how we allow players to manage their time in games.
Yeah.
Or we, gosh, even I'm hesitant to even complete the sentence because it feels futile, because people will just expect players to keep playing until they have major irreversible muscle damage. Of course, the reason this whole conversation started is because Saka and Bellingham have made themselves so indispensable through being so good. Yeah, right. So
Moose, Bellingham is a future England captain. We can
without
see
that question.
You know, a future without England question. Captain. So he's got a lot of football to play anyway. So I think that we're so lucky to have that caliber of player. Because remember, in I think 2018, you look at the Euros. Someone like Bellingham, the way he's playing now, playing in those games, different outcome.
Totally different.
Different.
But actually, on Saka though, because you know this is about a podcast in praise of Saka and Bellingham. this is a question actually I want to throw in from DC Arsenal. Mm. How much would Ian have enjoyed playing with Saka, and does he remind Ian of any ex-teammates?
Well, I would have loved to play with Saka. You know, he's a top player. He's a top player, and the way he plays, very unselfish. Obviously, I would have to change my game, Moose, because like, you know, Saka cutting inside, you know, will I have to be there just to lay it back off to him? Can I be in the box? You know, I would love to play with him simply because of the joy and the energy, everything what he brings to the game. You know what I mean? What, like I say, I'm very worried about the amount of fouls that's committed on him. But like, he's just so good. When you say players, like, he doesn't remind me of... Who does he remind me of? I'm trying to think that who he reminds me of. He doesn't remind me of any of the players. There's not many players like how he plays now, especially if they were playing back then and they'd have been on the left side. You know, there's no one. There's no one that's like Saka. Saka's doing what he's
extraordinary.
Doing.
It's so strange, because I was thinking about this recently as well, like, because he's not like a, you know, he cuts in, but he's not like an Iron Robin, because he's not predictable.
Apart,
like,
apart from the goal against Ukraine, that was a bit Iron Robin-y.
Well, even that, no, that wasn't, because the way he rolls his man.
Right.
Robin cuts in off the flank when the man is retreating, but Saka spun him.
Spun him.
That's the thing. You see the way he spins off him, and he's suddenly got 2 meters of space. That is enough. Wow. That's advanced technology. That's something. So there's something else going on with Saka. Like, I look at him and I think about wingers who reminds me of, and I genuinely don't, I can't remember, this is not a dig on him at all. Like, he's not physically tall. So you look at him first and go, okay, how could that dominate a flank? But the guy's basically got the same kind of, like, it looks like Samir Nasri at first, but he's dominant. Like, how is a guy that size?
That dominant.
Right, exactly. And that's physical.
The same with Jude. Is that even when I went up to St. George's Park the other day, to see him that close, he's an Adonis man of a man. His size, you know, his presence, his aura, you know what I mean? And I think that the difference, I think, with maybe, we look at someone like Dele Alli's in that list, and we've seen how it's gone for Dele, because remember Dele, when Dele hit the scene, it was like, oh my gosh, man. Remember, Dele played in the 2018 World Cup. I think the attitude of these two players and the way they are and how focused they are on the teams that are around them and the people that are around them, I don't think we should worry too much. Well, I think we're worrying simply because of how young they are, and you look at that list and you think, hopefully, they're being managed right. But when you look at the attitude of these players, how gifted, how talented they are, and how driven they are, I think we're going to, if something special don't happen for the England men's team, even though we've got to compete with the France team, with these kind of players in it, then something's gone wrong somewhere along the line, because they are excellent. They are exceptional players.
Obviously, I grew up on what was called the golden generation that didn't win anything with Svenger and Eriksson, etc.
Yeah.
But do you think this is actually it? We've got some crazy talented, good players, but do you think this is actually it for the best squad?
It could be, because we're getting close. We're getting close 2018, close the Euros. World Cup, you know, went out on that penalty miss, really. We're close. We're not a million miles away. And you could see it with the way our together this group is. We're close. This is, for me, I'm more excited about this group simply because of the how they've got to the latter stages on so many occasions. I'm more excited for this team than I was with the Golden Generation, even though when you put the Golden Generation down on paper.
On paper.
When you put it down on paper, somewhere, I don't, that's another podcast. But this team is for me, they're putting that team to bed.
The way they combine, it's the way, you know, it's that generation, don't get me wrong, that generation.
They're together, this group's
astonishing.
Together.
It's group the blend.
Is so together, Moose. And Frank, like Rio talked about it, they talked about how they were so wrapped up in their club's personal like drive to win trophies that they actually forgot what it was like to be for around England. And that's why Gareth is so integral to everything about the group.
Incredible, yeah.
So Flo, WSL title race, man. We did get a question on it, funny. Natalie_17 asked, righty, who do you think will win the league? Will United finally get into Champions League? I think Man United can do it, man.
I think they can do it.
You know something? I was listening to Counter Press, and I think it was Jesse who said it. They've just got to take the... It's like what Arsenal got to do. You can't worry about Chelsea, what Chelsea are going to do now. You know, even though I kind of worried about Chelsea because I don't know how Chelsea are going to create, man. I know they got Sam Kerr, but please don't let... No, please cut this bit out so Emma don't hear. I don't want Emma coming for me, but it seems to be a problem with creation. And taking Lauren James off 35 minutes, was that to prove something? I feel that United have just got to take each game as it comes. And I know that the other day against West Ham weren't very good. Offensively terrible. I thought they should have had a penalty. I thought Sissoko pushed in the first. I thought that was a penalty. I sent a message to Kaz Kani. She blanked me. Sent it to Kelly Smith. Blanked me. Well, they didn't blank me, but they weren't having the fact that I thought it was a penalty. And I said, if that's...
I thought, to be honest, it was soft, that first one. The second one, absolutely, but the first one I thought was ridiculous. A little bit.
I think that Man United can do it. If they've got to believe they can do it. But City, because of the way the season started and because Man United started so well and everything's going so well for United, they've gone under the radar, like you guys said on Counter Press. They have. And City are still in and around. But Man United definitely for Champions League. And it wouldn't bother me if Man United went on to win it. Would not bother me at all.
So it's amazing, first of all, like to have four teams all within a shot of winning it is so good and so exciting. I still think there's something that makes me believe Chelsea will do it because they've got this game in hand. So even if, and so do Arsenal, but even if City and United go on to win every single game they've got left, Chelsea, that wouldn't ensure that they win the title. So they've got that. And obviously they've just got that mentality that they have from winning it so many times now. Yeah. They just are relentless. So it still makes me think that even though sometimes I feel like Emma Hayes is battling herself more than anyone else with some of these changes that she's been making, games and things like that. And obviously they've got this massive Champions League game in the back of their mind. I still feel like there's something that makes me think they still could do it. But for me, the next best, if it's not going to be Chelsea, is going to be Manchester City because they've only got Arsenal and United left to play. Chelsea also, to be honest, have the most favourable run-in because they've only got to play Arsenal of those big teams. But City, they're playing Arsenal this weekend and then they've got United in the second last game of the season.
Yeah.
And I just feel like the way that they're playing right now, they just look so good. They look so confident going forward. They've got more tools than anyone else, really, in terms of depth and squad. I think their back line is still a little bit weak, but I still think they just look so good going forward.
It looked good the other day, though. That back line looked good the other day.
They got comfortable. They definitely got comfortable. And they've got the experience. They've got the experience, but... It's going to be such a good finish to the season.
Flo, I think there's a big problem for Chelsea in that game against Arsenal. I'm seeing drop points there. You know, look at the last two games that like Chelsea have been really faced with something in the domestic competition. You look at Arsenal in the Conte Cup and you look at City, and this is the worrying thing for Chelsea, right? Attempting to do game management and it failed. Emma Hayes has tried in these two huge games now, the Conte Cup final, now this game against City. You make big changes and substitutions and you can't, then neither of them have been a catalyst. Mm. And then, you know, Lauren James at this point, this incredible form, this run she went on, where she was so good, people have to work out a different way of making stopping her coming in field. Then she's hurting you from distance with the long passing. Then, okay, she doesn't have the best half hour against City, but the game is still in the balance. It's still negotiable. And then you take her off.
Mm.
What that does for confidence, because then it's saying that you don't have much margin for error. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
With Harder out, with Kirby out, you need your primary playmakers to be in a place where I back you. I back you to create something. Even if you're not playing at the highest level in your flow and your rhythm, you're such a brilliant playmaker. You're like a Fran Kirby who can create something brilliant, even though you've been quiet for 20 minutes. And to take that away, to take that opportunity to create something away from a player after 35 minutes, it's a high grade humiliation.
It is. You know, you did mention Peniel Harder and Fran Kirby. That's got to be acknowledged. But at the same time, I do feel that Chelsea and Chelsea's mentality at the moment, because Chelsea were blasting teams. It was Chelsea's to lose up until, I don't know, up until now, really.
And it feels different now. It feels different.
It does feel different. And I think that maybe the players themselves have to go through that. Listen, we've got to stop thinking that we just need to go out there and let them blast, punch themselves out, and then we just... bam, score, just beat them without playing well. Chelsea now have to, and I saw it. It was evident in the Conte Cup where I was watching them and I was thinking, no, Arsenal, this is Arsenal's to lose today. Because Chelsea, especially going through their midfield, there's no build-up play, really. You've got someone like Sam Kerr who's ready to go, and then you haven't really got the creation in the middle. And then, you know, then you take off someone like Lauren James, who probably could give you that creation and play the ball through a little bit more. Obviously, Millie Bright missing is never good. It's never good. That's frightening.
And Aaron Cuthbert coming off in that game on Sunday.
You're looking at, and it just seems you can look at Chelsea now, and from teams on the outside looking in, you could just feel like they're there for the taking. You know what I mean? I feel like... We can go at them. They're not the same Chelsea mentally. They've got to get that mental strength back of being the best, because at the moment, I don't think they even believe that they are at the moment.
I think they still have that, because the fact that they went away to Lyon and got that 1-0 advantage from the first leg, I think is massive. And I think they still do have that. They had it against Manchester United in the league.
Are they saving themselves? Are they saving their strong? Are they saving their strong mentality for the Champions League?
Well, I mean, that's certainly what Jesse thinks. They said it on Counter Press yesterday. They said, I think the WSL is feeling, it seems like that's secondary mentally for this Chelsea team. And maybe that's right. I don't know. I think for me, Sunday felt like tired bodies and tired minds. You know, the touch was off for everyone.
Yeah, but that's elite teams. Yeah, but you have to, for an elite team.
I know, but it just, everything just seemed off.
Yeah. But look,
That's fair.
Do you see what I'm saying? It's like I go back to the Conte Cup. I even watching the game the other day, and it's majorly off, I think, at the moment. The eggs are in the Champions League basket.
I think when you reflect in, when you look at all of the top four, if you wanted to sort of do it on a graph, you would look at Arsenal right now, graph definitely going up from, being pretty rocky at the start.
Yeah.
City going right up. Way United has kind of been a bit more wiggly. Yeah. And Chelsea's is kind of on the way down a little bit if you look at the WSL. So it's interesting if you kind of try and map it out on a little graph, then I can kind of see what you're looking at.
Look, and this is again, can I just say this in Chelsea's, absolute to your point, Flo, and this, I say this ultimately in Chelsea's defense, right? They've been on an incredible run these last few years. All of that fatigue is there. They have major injuries. And the Champions League is still, it's the final dragon that Emma Hayes has to slay as the Chelsea coach. So I totally get why you divert resources towards that and trust your players to get it done. At the end of the day, they didn't bring clowns on when they took off Lauren James. They brought on Guru Wrighton, for goodness sake, who's an extraordinary player. So that's a player who's good enough to get it done.
This is what I think is so hard for Chelsea right now, is that they are almost battling themselves more than any other WSL side. And that could be ultimately what undoes them at the end of the day, is that they're battling themselves to try and get the ultimate prize of the Champions League. They're battling themselves trying to solve problems in games that seemingly would be quite easy to solve by going direct, which has been successful for them. But I think no other team has that challenge right now when it comes to United City and Arsenal. they're all on that growth mentality where the only way is up, the only way is to improve. But obviously, if you're Chelsea and you're at the top, you're always going to be looking over your shoulder. You're always going to be looking down. I think that's the challenge that they have right now to try and battle. But I do think all those teams are in decent positions to form some sort of title challenge.
So, guys, before we go, I had a question from Bonzu. It's a quite an interesting one. And he says, thoughts on Flo Balogun to the USMNT as a Yank? I'm excited. Moose, I saw Gareth Southgate's comments on Balogun, and he kind of mentioned, which I thought was a little bit disrespectful, the French league. And remember, you know, we were still seeing, you know, Mbappe and Neymar and Messi in there doing their stuff, and he's up there amongst those names. And so when it's talking about England and he's talking about the Premier League and Ligue 1, I thought that he probably could have stayed away from that and just deal with Florian Balogun and what he's doing at the moment. And he's got a massive decision to make now for me, for him.
In relation to the quality of the French league?
No, in respect of who he's going to play for. Is he going to go to the US? Is he going to go to the USA men's team? Is he going to go to Nigeria? Is he going to go to England? You know, I think they asked Gareth that question, and Gareth kind of like talked around it, spoke about the French league, spoke about the fact that Ivan Toney, Ollie Watkins, Eddie Nketiah scoring goals in the Premier League. He had to go across to the French league to try and build his numbers up and do his stuff, and he's still not played too many games. And I thought kind of deflected a little bit, if we want to talk about a number nine, that, you know, Harry Kane's not going on forever and we need as many quality number nines coming through as we can. Hopefully he can get back to Arsenal at some stage and prove himself, or go somewhere else, whether it's Premier League or somewhere else, and prove himself. But I think that he has to get a mention. It's a good question. If I was America, I'd be very excited about the fact that he might want to choose us. If I was Nigeria, I'd be very excited because he's gone to another level in confidence. And I think that anywhere he goes in respect of leagues, he will do what he's doing with the right service. Anywhere. Because what's happened is, while he was here, and we saw him playing in a few games for Arsenal, he didn't get to the places where he could get the chances and take the chances, what we've seen him take in France. People might say, oh, it's because the league's better. They can say whatever they want, but it's the way he's taking those chances. His headspace is in a different place now. He knows he can do it now. And I guarantee if he comes back, he probably picks up from what he's doing in that league. I think.
I have to say, yeah, and with Southgate, I just have to say this. His remarks, he said, look, we like Flo. He has obviously not had an opportunity in the Premier League yet. So we have to add those goals to Ivan Toney, for example, or Ollie Watkins.
Yeah.
All I will say about that is two words. Eduardo Camavinga. If we are doubting the quality of the French league, and Tchouaméni and Camavinga are right there and are dominant for France and for Real Madrid,
yes,
having come out of the French league as fully formed players, right? Well, you know, fully formed to the extent they can dominate.
Absolutely.
From almost the moment they step on a pitch for Real Madrid or France. The French league is very, very good. And the level of fitness there is very, very good. And he has one of the best young coaches in the world taking care of him. So I don't think that's a reason. The Premier League opportunity thing is not a valid reason, I think, to deny him an opportunity. As much as I respect Southgate, that's all with respect to Southgate. I'm just saying that I disagree with that assessment.
Yeah, I did as well. And the thing is, we can't keep blasting. Yes, the Premier League's what it is.
You know, England need a nine. They need a nine.
Thank you.
They need a succession plan, right? Mm. Because look, Ivan Toney is absolutely brilliant. Okay, he's brilliant. And also, Ivan Toney's peak is in sight. We need to be preparing for a number nine whose peak we cannot yet see.
Yes.
Right? Jude Bellingham, we cannot see the peak. Bukayo Saka, we cannot tell how good he's going to get because he's extraordinary. Mm. The scoring form he's on now, the consistency he's adding. We need to look at players like Balogun where they can make a leap forward and be out of sight.
Yes.
We need to look for the next Benzema, to be honest. That's what this is about, actually.
Mm. Musa, you say it's so easy. We just need to find
it. It is easy. Listen.
Go find it.
I'm on a podcast with like the legends flowing in. Like,
come on.
My life is easy.
Come on.
When you look at the strikers, so you had Lineker, then you had Shearer, then you had Owen, then you had Rooney. You know, all of these guys, late 30s in goals for England, obviously record breakers as well. Then you had Rooney, now you've got Harry Kane. You know what I mean? We need to find that person. That person is coming who's going to score in the qualifiers, score in the World Cups, win World Cup golden boots. You know, we need to find that next player. So we've got to do everything we can to make sure that whoever fits into that mold of, with the players that he's got around, you look at the players that Flo Balogun could have around him as a number nine at England, with Bellingham, with Saka, you know, with Rashford, with all those people who can be behind him, with Foden, with Grealish and that. You put Flo Balogun maybe in that kind of vicinity, bam, you never know what can happen. He could go, he scores goals at an alarming rate. We've got to find that next number nine who's going to be able to score goals to win us games in those tournaments. And at the moment, it's not there. It's not there at the moment. So I would say, don't say things maybe at this point to dissuade somebody from having a go. You know what I mean? Because if I'm America, I'm rolling out the ticker tape, bro. I'm rolling out the ticker tape for Flo Balogun. If I'm Nigeria, I'm putting on the Afro beats when he gets off the plane.
And
what does
right
he
too.
Need? You know what I mean?
Quite right
so,
too, yeah.
So I then say, what if that's careful. What if that's what America's doing and that's what Nigeria doing, what would England do?
I don't know. I was just trying to think
what
of
would
it.
what would our equivalent be?
What would our equivalent be? So they got the ticker tape reception in an open top car.
Subsidized family train travel.
A rail car.
Rent controls in central London. Rent controls.
But like, you know, that's the only worry what I saw with that. And I thought, you know, because we want to make sure that we keep everybody on side. Everybody needs to feel like they've got a chance.
I think
everybody.
That's right.
So fingers crossed. But like, good question, that one. Yeah.
Love that.
So guys, thank you very much for coming into the house. Mr. Kwonga, thank you very much, Flo Lloyd Hughes. To see you soon.
Yes, absolutely.
See you soon.
Nice one, absolutely. Man. God bless. Thanks for that. Thank you very much, everybody. Thank you very much, Musa Kwonga. Thank you very much, Flo Lloyd Hughes. We'll see you again on Friday. Take it easy. Have a good couple of days.